gentlemen, welcome to episode 60 of season 11 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Brian Boucher of the Top Gun Minute. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's, we've known each other for years, and I've never had you on my show, so I'm very glad that I was able to find time for you to join me. And I hope that you enjoy Band of Brothers.
Oh, I did. I did, for sure.
All right. So episode 60 begins with Liebgott walking away with the prisoners and ends with Nixon gloating. So before we dive into this particular minute, Brian, why don't you tell me and everyone else your background with Band of Brothers?
Well, I just, for the first time for this podcast, I watched Band of Brothers. I did not watch it when it originally came out. And I didn't watch it when it came back on. They did the restream of it on Hulu or HBO, whichever one it was. Because I had recently got out of the military back then. A few years, like in 1998, I got out of the military and I'd moved back home in March of 2001. So, and then with the whole thing with September 11th happening, when this came out like 2 days before for the series. And I was stuck to the news. I didn't want to watch anything else because I was afraid I was going to get recalled back into the military. So I was watching everything I can about anything that was going on, you know, with the terrorist attack. And so I never watched it. And then I kind of just forgot about it. Plus at the time, I mean, I knew about it because I knew Tom Hanks was attached to it and Steven Spielberg. And the fact that, you know, they just had done Saving Private Ryan not long before. So I was just like, well, it's another... And I thought it was going to be like another Saving Private Ryan type of thing. And so I just really wasn't interested at the time. And then September 11th happened and it just completely killed it for me. So I didn't get to watch it until a couple days ago. I watched the whole series all the way through and I absolutely loved it. It was great.
Wow. I'm once again happy that I've been able to convince someone or / force someone to sit and watch Band of Brothers and you know, still have a positive perception of the whole thing. So, oh wow, that's great. Mm-hmm. Did you know about the idea behind Band of Brothers? I mean, again, I know that you mentioned that you knew about the miniseries, but did you know that the whole idea of that this was about a particular company of men during World War II and their connections and things like that, or were you just exposed to that as you were watching the entire series?
Yeah, when I watched the series the other day, that was when I was really new about what was going on. I just knew back in the day that it was just a Tom Hanks thing, another Army movie or something. And I really didn't have no idea what it was going to be about. So, a couple of days ago was when I figured it out. Oh, wow. I really wish I would have watched it back then. It's pretty moving.
Well, again, we can't change the past from that perspective, you know, so you need to look at it from the perspective that you've now watched it and you enjoy it. So, you know, even if it took 25 years, there are a lot of blind spots that we all have in movies, you know, so, you know, yes, by looking at it and saying, I wish I would have seen it back then again, obviously, but we can't change that, you know, so I'm glad that, that you were able to step up and join me here and, you know, learn all about the Men of Easy Company. You know, so that's great. That's great. That's
great. Yeah.
Yeah. So we left things off yesterday with Winters basically getting a little upset with Liebgott about the fact that he knew that Liebgott is very upset about the Germans that they captured. And, you know, he's a little concerned that Liebgott might actually take matters into his own hands and, I guess you can say pull up spears and, mm-hmm. And the guys, they won't be able to get debriefed. and interrogated and things like that. So, you know, what he did was he ended up leaving Liebgott with one bullet in his gun and told him to, you know, if you shoot one of them, the rest are going to charge you and get rid of you. And then they start walking away, and that's how today's minute begins. And, you know, we see Nixon walking past them. He comes, you know, towards us. And, you know, since we know that Nixon's obviously the guy who's he's an intelligence officer. So for him, it's very important to be able to interrogate all these guys also. And he goes and split them up. And he goes, yes, sir. So, you know, it's I like the idea that he says it that way, because it's the idea that don't let them, you know, don't let the prisoners discuss the situation so that they might be able to plan things or get their stories straight and stuff like that. You know, the whole idea is when you're interrogating people, you want everyone to have their own story so that you can try and figure out what's the truth and what's not. So I like the way they did that.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
And then they continue, you know, following Nixon a little bit. And we see that you know, he's walking through a whole bunch of guys that are all around this area where we just had this battle. We see a bunch of medics that are dealing with some of the injured soldiers. And we hear one of them say, Tommy, will you help me with this? And he goes, yep. All right. Here you are. And... you know, we get to see a little bit of the aftermath of what's going on here. And I like the way that they do that.
Yeah, me too.
I see one of the guys giving a little bit of one of the injured guys some water, you know, helping them out.
Yeah, one has a bloody leg. It looks like the skin's been kind of like sheared on it a little bit, you know. Right. So
that's true. And then one of the lieutenants says to one of the guys, he says to Nixon, he goes, we had them on the run. He goes, how's that? The Germans were flooding back towards the ferry crossing when we hit them with the artillery. It was like a turkey shoot. Then they hit us with their 88s, zeroed in on this crossroad. Now, we got lucky, though. Only 22 wounded. He goes, lucky. And then Nixon goes, well, what about Captain Winters? And he goes, right down there. And then, you know, he leaves this this officer and starts trying to find Winters. Because, you know, as we know, Nixon and Winters have this very, very close and strong bond, you know, which will last for, you know, 50 years after this story takes place. But, you know, they care about each other a lot about what's going on. And then we see that Nixon walks through a whole bunch of basically piles of dead bodies that are just lying on the ground. And I find that a little strange that they do that here on the one hand. But on the other hand, obviously, it's also very effective showing us the aftermath of what just happened here.
Right. Yeah. You considering know? There was, in real life, it was like, there was like 300 men or something like that, the Germans.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, it seems like a lot, but if you put it in that perspective, it really puts it out on the screen.
Yeah, exactly. And we even see some of the, Germans helping out with, you know, carrying a stretcher and things like that. So again, it's very effective. I mean, in later episodes, they're going to be even more effective with showing all the dead bodies around. And you know, in part six, there's a lot there that deals with that. But mm-hmm. You know, but the idea that Nixon is just walking matter of factly through this area, the shot changes, and once again, we get to see Winters contemplating what he's supposed to be writing, you know, in this report, or typing in this report. And you know, it's very the look on his face is very, you know, he's concentrating a lot, making sure that it shows the perfectionism of Winters. You know, that he couldn't give in a half-assed report. He had to give in a report that's going to be perfect and on point through the whole time. So I think that the choice by the director to do this is just great, you know, to focus in on his eyes. And then we get to see some of the text, you know, in the typewriter itself. You know, you can even read some of it. It just says, just then, a terrific and accurate mortar and military and artillery concentration hit us and continued to account for casualties. We moved both platoons 30 yards to the right and left, respectively, off the crossroads and away from danger. But the first concentration of two caught us. The first concentration or two caught us and accounts for something men, all wounded, none killed. They were not bunched up in a concentration covered over 200 yards in which they were something. Okay, that's about all that you can really read about it. But first of all, I give a lot of credit to the, you know, to Tom Hanks who directed this. You know, we know that's why there's a typewriter here. You know, there's no question about that. Tom Hanks is a typewriter aficionado, so that makes sense. But to actually have accurate typing on this typewriter is great, because they could just
I love that
whatever type of BS here. You know, a lot of times you see that in movies. You know, where you'll see like a newspaper article or something like that, and when you freeze frame it, you read it, and you're like, what the hell are they talking about here? Not even connected at all to the whole thing. So.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm going to attribute that to the times that technology was changing so much that, you know, TVs were getting better and the picture quality. And so it's, you know, they realize that they're going to have to do that because it's going to be on screen and, you know, it may be seen, you know.
We do it this way. I can guarantee that.
No, not this way. Not this way. But you could pause on it, and you could, you know, a lot of TVs are starting to get in zooms. You know, you can zoom in on, and you could actually read that stuff. So yeah, I appreciate that.
I like the way they did that. Yeah.
Yep.
And then Nixon, the shot changes, and we're back with Nixon. Getting ready to find Winters in the field, back where they were, and Winters is just sitting there looking out at this entire area where they had just gone through, and it looks as if he's possibly looking at a dead body, perhaps that young trooper that he killed at the beginning.
That's what I assumed.
Yeah, it's very possible. And then Nixon comes into the shot and comes over to Winters, and he goes, 22 wounded, huh? He goes, you okay? He goes, yeah. One killed. He goes, who? Dukeman. And then Nixon looks and goes, Dukeman. You know, knowing that, all right, you know, we lost one man. But, there's not much you can do about that. And then he in some ways tries to make Winters feel a little better. And he goes, you're looking at two full companies of SS, about 50 dead, probably another 100 wounded, 7 back in the regimental cage, plus a whole string of them up there. That's not bad for Dukeman. So, you know, it's an interesting way to look at it from a ratio perspective. You know, that Nixon's basically saying, okay, so we lost one guy, but in place of the one guy, look what we got. You know, we killed another 50. We have probably 150 prisoners now that we can now interrogate. But, you know, it's, I guess he's looking at it from an intelligence perspective.
Right.
That.
Yeah. You know, it's like you said, it's an intelligence officer. That's you know, it's the administrative side of things. You know, they're like, you know, it's just like when you're at your job, you know, you may have, you know, only you may have one bad complaint, but you sold so much product, you know, to make up for it. You know, who cares if you got one complaint? You know, we got all this other good stuff that's happening. But still, it's a life.
Correct.
That's a life. That's a guy who had a guy. The guy had a family, and you know, you got to take the good for the bad, but it's still a life, and every life is value.
100%.
So and then, you know, yeah, we had 22 wounded on our side, but our side only had like 60 guys total. So that's like a third, you know, of your troops that got injured. So, I mean, yeah. If you look at a numbers, yeah, it looks good on paper, but when you think about it, in real life, it's a different story.
Right, and again, I mean, they're the way they're showing this, and it's purposeful that we were able to see once again how much Winters cares about the men. You know, right. Because it's the personalization here that's the catch here. You know, the idea that mm-hmm. on the one hand, you know, okay, you lost one man, but this one man is someone that I knew. This is, you know, a friend. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
We're not just talking about someone, you know, who we didn't know, or, you know, some random guy. This is a guy that we know.
Yeah. But actually, we really, us as the audience, really didn't know him, because Dukeman was there, but he never had the actor never had a speaking role. So we actually never seen, you really didn't get to know Dukeman.
Correct.
At all.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, according to the book, I mean, Dukeman died in a heroic way because he was trying to save everyone else.
You know, right.
Because what it says on page 115, it says, as the patrol waited for the reinforcements, Sergeant William Dukeman stood up to shout at the men to spread out. As Gordon Carson, who recalled the incident, remarked, the men will congregate in a minute. Three Germans hiding in a culvert that ran under the road fired a rifle grenade. Dukeman gave a sigh and slumped forward. He was the only man hit. A chunk of steel went into his shoulder blade and came out through his heart, killing him. The survivors opened up the rifles on the Germans in the culvert and killed him in return. So, you know, it's just a one little paragraph that talks about what happened to him, but it just, you know, tells us the type of thing that, you know, the pretty much the reason he got killed was the fact that he was trying to, you know, make sure that the men would not congregate. So that's something else, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But again, the look on Winter's face just says it all. It tells us so much about the character, about how much he really cares about the other men around him, and the men that he trained with, and, you know, did things with. So
yeah, and the one kid he killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that incident is going to change him for the rest of his life.
That's correct. Especially since, if I remember correctly, that's probably the last German that he kills.
Yes.
In this entire
spoiler.
Yeah. Spoiler. Yeah. I mean, you've seen the whole thing more recently than I have, so maybe you recall something else. But I'm pretty sure that this was the last time that he fired his gun, killing.
Yeah, it gets mentioned in a later episode.
All right. Okay.
So. All
right. You see, I guess I haven't gotten to those episodes yet. So.
Right.
So rewatch them. Yeah, you know, he turns to Nixon and goes, "You got a drink?" And then he pauses, and Nixon pulls out his canteen and goes, "Of water," which again is a great way to once again insinuate the fact that that Winters knew that Nixon is supplementing his water with other beverages, I guess you could say.
Right. Right.
And then
it's a good little laugh moment.
Yeah, and again, it's something that close friends can make a comment like that without it meaning too much.
Yeah, right.
It's a little jab, and that's it. That's all you need. You don't need more than that. And then Nixon goes, "Yeah, that's water." And you know, then he takes a swig of it, which but I mean, Nixon also smells the canteen beforehand just to make sure.
Yeah. Just to make sure.
Just to make sure that this is the right canteen. I'm bringing you. I'm giving you the one that has actual water in it.
Yeah.
And once again, they do a great job of playing the great theme music here. You know, as mm-hmm. Winters and Nixon look on this area and they see all these dead German bodies on the ground. And then Winters just turns around, grabs his helmet and gun, and just walks away, realizing that, okay, there's nothing else for him to do here. And Nixon follows him, but gives a look at everything, look at all the damage on the ground there before he moves out. And then the shot changes, and we get to see Colonel Sink. And he goes, 363rd Volksgrenadier hit Oppensaden. About the same time, your SS made a run for my op down the road. 3rd Battalion got the hell beat out of them. And he goes, Ollie Horton was killed. And Nixon just turns to him and goes, Major Horton's dead? I guess that's a great intelligence officer.
Right.
And he goes, they hit 2nd Battalion up in force. He was organizing the defense. So, again, this is great exposition to explain, how things, happen. And, Major Horton is a character who's mentioned numerous times, but we never get to see him. He's always mentioned in passing. Do you know anything about Major Oliver Horton?
I don't.
Okay, so he was killed on October 5th, 1944. He's buried in the Netherlands in the Margretten American Cemetery. And so he was born in 1912, which means that he was 36 at the time. 32, sorry. He was born in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he was fatally wounded near the railway station of Apphausen, which is near the Linge Canal at the south end of the town. There was a mortar round that went off not far from him when he was moving westward in that area. And the book by Ian Gardner called Deliver Us from Darkness, on page 196, it mentions that as we were preparing to pull back from the pillbox, Horton arrived and asked where we thought we were going. I respectfully replied that there was now heavy machine gun fire coming down the tracks and that we'd be surrounded and killed if we stayed a minute longer. I couldn't believe it when the major stepped out from behind the bunker and was struck in the midsection by one of the machine guns that I'd warned him about. We laid Horton down on the protective side of the blockhouse. There was nothing on earth we can do for him, and he died a few minutes later. I looked at my watch, and it said 10:20. Shortly afterwards, a jeep from B-326 collected Horton's body and took it to the regimental aid station, the local Dorp School in Zetten. Major Horton was a well-liked officer, known by all because of his strong southern drawl. He's described by one of the men with positive memories and feelings about serving with him. Although it was upsetting to leave, I was excited to discover that the other aspect of my assignment was to provide close protection for Major Horton. The major treated me well, and personally, I think he was equal in professionalism to Colonel Woolvitt, the 3rd Battalion commander who was tragically killed during the D-Day jump in Normandy before even setting one foot in French soil. Okay, Major Horton jumped with the 506th into France in the early morning hours of D-Day. After the loss of 3rd Battalion CO, Lieutenant Wolvertin, Horton, who was S2 of the battalion, as well as Lieutenant Strayer's XO in 2nd Battalion for a while, became the acting commander of the unit during their time in Normandy as of June 19th. So that also gives us more information here, that Horton wasn't he was originally the S2, and Nixon then became the S2 when Horton moved up to take over for Wolverton, who was killed. So that's interesting. I never thought about the fact that Nixon took over that position because there was a promotion because someone was killed, that type of thing.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Nope.
Yeah, which also is very interesting, the fact that when in the first episode, when Luz is imitating Major Horton, to try to get on Sobel's nerves. He's imitating the intelligence officer.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. And then it continues and says that Horton also made the second jump into the Netherlands during the Operation Martin Garden. And then a few days after he turned 32, Actually, it was about a month, almost a month later. He was killed. So he was originally buried in a temporary cemetery, and then afterwards he was moved to the American cemetery at Margraton, and he was given a silver star for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action against the enemy. He was also posthumously awarded the Purple Heart, and he was a qualified combat infantryman, parachutist, and received the World War II Victory Medal and the American Campaign Medal. Also the Distinguished Unit Citation and Good Conduct Medal, and the European African Middle Eastern Campaign Medal. And there is a bridge in Afsaden which is dedicated to Major Horton. That's interesting. That my assumption is it's not far from where he was killed. So, yeah. No, it's just it's interesting that here we have a character who's just mentioned in passing numerous times, but you know there's so much to talk about him himself, you know, about things that he did. You know, and the fact that he was, trying to organize a defense at the time is also great. You know, because he wasn't just, I mean, as we will see later today and the beginning of next week, you know, we see what type of work, spoiler, Winters is given, you know, when he takes over for Horton in that position. So, you know, the fact that he still had a combat background and was doing combat initiatives is great to see. And then Sink basically says, Captain Nixon, excuse us for a minute. You know, and he takes Winters aside, and then Sink says to him, he says, how would you feel about handing a battalion? I'm moving you up to executive officer of 2nd Battalion. Colonel Strayer is, well, he can use some help. So it's an interesting way for him to look at it from that perspective, to do it this way. But it also shows that Sink is able to see something in Winters that Winters himself probably doesn't even see. You know, he might suspect it, but he's humble enough to not really be concerned about it. You know, he's good as, you know, someone who's leading easy. He doesn't feel that he needs to do anything else. But Sink sees that his future is very bright, and that we can get a lot out of Winters with what he needs to do. And Winters' response is, "Well, I know I can handle them in the field, sir." Because that's right, Dick. You're a solid technician and a good leader. Don't worry about administration. And then, obviously, Winters' main concern here is who's going to take over for him. And he goes, who do you think will be taking over Easy, sir? He goes, Moose Heiliger can command Easy Company. And Winters looks at him and shakes his head and goes, Ten Heiliger would be my choice, sir. He goes, good. You pack your gear and come up to my the battalion OP. Yes, sir. So, yeah, it's a nice way for them to give us just these few seconds explaining that, you know, Winters is done being in charge of Easy. He's moving up. You know, he's going to move on to bigger and greater things, and be able to have a different influence, if not an even more powerful influence on everything that's going on. You know, which we will see obviously over the next few months as we discuss this. You know, when Winters is in a completely different situation with the whole thing. And now, did you notice that during the conversation between Sink and Winters, did you notice some of the things that are going on in the background?
Was that when they were like getting, like, you see the troopers like getting coffee and just kind of standing around?
Yes, but it also looks like they're picking up, I don't know, one of the guys seems to take a gun and points it in direction. I'm wondering if it's that he's cleaning his own gun or has he found a souvenir. No. You know, it could be either. You don't know. Again, it's going on in the background, so you're not really sure 100% what is going on there.
Yeah.
But it the to me it looks like it could be either. Could be that he's got his own gun, or he's found another gun of from one of the enemy. And then yes, you're right. They show a whole bunch of guys making coffee. You see the guys all have grit on their face. From the battle. It does a really nice job of showing us what's going on here. We see Talbert, and we see Martin, we see Malarkey, we see some of the other guys. They'll just hang around. It would have been really cool if they showed us Hilliger at the time, but they don't. that would have been nice for him to look around and see Moose and then be like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
But it's possible also Moose,
yeah, like that.
I'm feeling that Moose wasn't here with them at this particular time. He was with a different platoon.
Right.
So,
right.
But again, it would have been great.
I just thought, it's funny. The medic actually comes up and offers Winter some coffee, and he accepts it. But when I first seen him, and I was like, "Who's this guy?" And then,
you're gonna find out very shortly
in a later episode. He's gonna be predominantly in another episode.
Correct.
Coming up.
Stay
tuned.
Part 6 talks all about Doc Rowe. Yes. And again, one of the things is that Doc Rowe does pop up here and there beforehand, like in this scene, in order for us to recognize him, that when he shows up later, we're like, oh, okay, I know who that guy is. That type of thing. So yes, as you said, so as Sink walks away, Winters is just thinking about the big change that just happened to him. That he's no longer going to be in charge of Easy.
Yeah, his crossroads.
That's right. That's definitely his crossroad of that. And then Doc Rowe shows up and says, like some coffee, sir? And he goes, yeah, thanks, Doc. He goes, all right. And then, Doc walks away. But again, you can see the other men, in the background taking their time. And then the shot changes and we're back in, we're in what turns out to be Winter's new office. And Nixon comes up the steps with Moose, and he goes, "Hey, Dick, you finished your novel yet? That's a lot of homework."
Yeah, right.
And Moose says,
"Like you said before, it's when we've seen that page on the typewriter, there's two full pages of stuff and written down to him being so meticulous about every single detail." I like how when Nixon comes in and he says, just simplify it, man.
That's right.
That's all you got to do.
That's right. But Winters can't do that. It's not who he is. He has to be as detailed as possible about everything, which is great.
Yeah, that's been Nixon's job. Nixon's job has been an intelligence officer. He's written probably 1,000 reports. This is the first time that Winters has had to. I'm saying in this particular manner, he's being an administrative person now, and but Nixon's always been, he's always had that job, so it's nothing new to him. So it's just fresh meat, going in and trying to I don't know if it's, yes, Winters is very particular about his details. He's a very strong soldier, very dedicated, but it's also, he wants to do this to make, I'm sure he wants to be as detailed as possible. So, he probably doesn't want Colonel Sink to come down on his ass.
Right. That's obviously part of it also. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You think that's what he wants to do. And then, so Nixon, is followed by Moose, and Moose, and I thought the executive officer was supposed to be a fun job.
Yeah. Right.
But again, they're jibing Winters about this whole thing, because you know he knows it's not what he needs. And then you have another character that's there next to them, that is you know, giving pages to Winters. And Nixon just turns to him and goes, "Who are you?" He goes, "Zelensky, sir." And he goes, and then Nixon turns to Winters and goes, "Who is he?" He goes, "Zelensky's my orderly." Luce goes, "Well, rank does have its privileges."
Right.
And then Nixon says to him, "Orderly, I suppose you just do stuff like get coffee." And he goes, "Can do, sir." He goes, "Black, no sugar." And
a bacon sandwich.
He starts walking away and he goes, "And a bacon sandwich." And he turns to Moose. He goes, "You?" And he goes, "Bacon sandwich." And so it's nice the way that they do that. And then, now, do you know the story behind the character of Zelensky?
No, I do not.
Okay, so this is the character who was supposed to be played by Connor Radcliffe, who's a Ratliff, who's a comedian, and he did an entire podcast called Dead Eyes, talking about the fact of how he was given this this part, and then how he was how the part was taken away from him and given to this guy instead. So anyone who's interested, you can go and check out that that podcast. It has, I think, 32 episodes, and I pretty much binged the whole thing within 2 days back when I was doing my my research for this season, because to me it was just so fascinating. Like, a friend of mine mentioned it to me that there is this idea of Dead Eyes, and I'm like, I've never heard of it. And then it was just so amazing listening to it. And he interviewed a whole bunch of the guys from you know, the connections in Band of Brothers, in order to try and understand why Tom Hanks fired him. You know, and one of the guys that he does talk to is, you know, the actor who plays both Zelensky and also the actor who plays Moose. And I'm pretty sure he also talked to Ron Livingston. I'm pretty sure. During the course of his...
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And it's just very funny, because based on what I do know of Connor Ratliff, I mean, he's very talented, but he doesn't look like an orderly the same way that this guy who plays Zelensky does, you know, from that perspective.
Right. I'm sure.
You know, I think that could have been what the idea was. I mean, the whole premise behind the podcast is that he was told that he wasn't given the part because he has dead eyes. And that's where the whole idea comes from.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So then Zelensky leaves, I guess, to go get the coffee and maybe bacon sandwiches. I don't know.
Yeah. Everybody loves a bacon sandwich.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently. And then Winters takes the report that he just typed out and gives it to Nixon. And he says, "Give that to Colonel Sink with my compliments." And he looks at it and he goes, "All that for 2 pages? Guess that means you're going to take a while."
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. He goes, "You want a job?" He goes, "There it is. I think somebody wishes that you were back in charge of Easy Company, Moose." Because you can see that Winters is not really into this.
Right.
You know, he's not, you know, this isn't really what he wants to be doing.
No. He wants to be out leading his troops.
And then he turns to both of them and goes, "Are you just here to gloat?" And Nixon just starts laughing. And he goes, "No," even though we know that he is.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, that,
for sure.
Definitely why he's there. And as he says that's where this 5-minute segment ends. So, Brian, is there anything else you wanted to add about this particular 5-minute segment?
Well, the only thing that I thought of is that, you know, it's called Crossroads for a reason. You know, it's not just the place. It's, you know, physical, the mental transformation that Winters is going to have to go through with this new position that he has. And it's funny that, because this little segment is where we find that out. And the beginning half of this episode, you know, we're just seeing it as a flashback. And it's when we think, oh, it's just, he's the, you know, the leader, you know, the field leader, and he just has to write a report after every battle or whatever. And then you find out why he's actually doing it, and that he got a promotion. Now is why he has to write this report, you know, and that's when you figure it out. And it's like a good revelation. And I think the, you know, the director and the writers, and they did a great job with this flashback and using the timing just perfectly to get that across right there at the, you know, basically at the middle of this, you know, episode 5.
Right.
So I think they did an awesome job with it.
Yeah. Again, Tom Hanks, this is Tom Hanks episode, so it makes sense.
Right. Correct. Right. Yeah. And was it Eric? I can't remember his last name. The writer. Anyways, he wrote the first episode. He wrote this episode, and he wrote the last episode. So, and I guess him and Tom Hanks worked together from basically the beginning of the idea of doing the movie.
Oh, you're talking about Eric Dendershot.
Yes, them. Yeah. And yeah, so I think they did a really great job with this.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think they did it perfect. All right. So today's segment is Band Brand, where my guests will give their top five fictional movie bands. So Brian, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, number five. Okay. So I'm a 80s and 90s kid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So my first one is, and this was just for you, because it's the Lone Rangers.
Ooh.
From oh crap, now I can't think of the movie. Airheads, right? And they played at, you know, when they did their show at the end of it, was at Nakatomi Tower.
Yes,
that's for you.
There you go.
Yeah, because they did that in Die Hard. That's
yes,
awesome.
They did.
Okay. And I am very much a time travel genre movie goer. I love those types of movies. So I'm going to go with The Wild Stallions from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
All right. That is great. Awesome.
Yeah. And then my favorite movie of all time, Back to the Future. So Marvin Berry and the Starlighters.
That definitely makes sense to be on there.
Yeah, and then my number two and number one, I'm gonna give, because they actually had real songs that became popular in real life. The Monkees from the TV show The Monkees. Yeah.
Okay.
And my number one is Eddie and the Cruisers.
Ooh. I gotta rewatch that movie. I remember loving it. I loved it. I loved it as a kid. That I remember.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I have most of their songs on my playlist.
I didn't like the sequel, but
no, I really didn't either.
But
the first one is great.
Right, it's Something in the Dark, isn't it? The Dark Side is the
Dark Side. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Excellent. That is a great list. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. So now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. I will spin the wheel and see what movie you get. Round and around and around the wheel goes.
Okay.
There really is a wheel, just so you know.
Okay.
Okay. This is a movie from 1958. Stars Marlon Brando and Montgomery Clift, along with Dean Martin. And it's about Marlon Brando plays a German soldier, and you have two American soldiers, and you know, the story is about what happens to all three of them during World War II. you have any idea what this movie is.
I can picture in my head. I can't think of the name of it. And you're probably gonna tell me, and I'm gonna be like, duh.
It's based on the novel by Irwin Shaw. I don't know if that helps at all. Directed by Edward Dmytryk. It's called The Young Lions.
The Young Lions. I know that. I have seen it. I think it's getting over.
That's fair. All right. So, Brian, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Well, at the moment, you can find me at Top 10 Minute, like I said at the beginning of the episode. 105 episodes of the original Top Gun movie back a few years ago. It's still out there. I'll leave it right there.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So, everyone have a great weekend. Brian will be back with me on Monday for another episode. But until then, curry heat.